Wednesday Word of Mouth here on CKLN 88.1 FM at Ryerson University. I'm Rob Agneto here with Daniel Libby. First up on the show, we'll be talking to Solomon Muyoboke from a local community organization called the Esplanade Community Group, located in the Esplanade area, just here in downtown Toronto, next to the St. Lawrence Center. Solomon says that all is not well in the planned neighborhood, and he'll talk to us about the Esplanade Community Group's latest campaign to stop police brutality. Then it's the Ontario Throne Speech 2010. We'll go through the speech paragraph by paragraph, and we'll hope you'll join us on the air as we open the phone lines to get your opinion and your ideas about how the budget fares in your eyes. Daniel?
That's right, and we've also got some info from today's events at City Hall, Toronto City Hall. David Miller made a speech. We got a surplus going on in Toronto, and federally things are looking a lot worse with major deficits going on federally, so we got some clips from the federal budget. We're going to break that down. We got some stuff locally with Toronto, and we got a whole lot more coming up today on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. It's March 10th, 2010. Word up. We'll be right back. Right after this.
Companies have downsized. Some have moved. Some have closed their doors for good, not just here in Ontario, but in neighboring states and provinces and places all around the world. No place has escaped the Great Recession unscathed. That is why your government is responding to the extraordinary challenge of the global recession with two extraordinary measures. First, it plans to invest over $32 billion in roads, bridges, public transit, and energy retrofits for our schools. This is creating and sustaining over 300,000 jobs and puts money into the hands of families where it is needed. And it is stimulating our economy while we emerge from the recession.
So words from the recession there. We're going to get into the Ontario Throne speech, which took place on Monday, a bit later on, next after we hear this interview. But Robin, did you want to introduce this interview?
Oh, yeah. So this is an interview with Solomon Muyoboke. He lives in the Esplanade community. That's a downtown community for you folks who live here. You'll know where that is. It's a planned community. It's a place where, you know, there's a lot of kids and there's parks and, you know, it's probably one of the nicer looking communities that includes folks from low incomes in the city. And I spoke with Solomon about his Esplanade Community Group because they had organized a forum on police brutality. And this was on March the 3rd. So that was last Wednesday between 6:30 and 8 p.m. And so I interviewed him because I want to find out what's going on in the Esplanade. So we'll just go ahead with that interview. I'm talking about the Esplanade community here with Solomon. Solomon is he's a member of the Esplanade Community Group, and he's going to be talking to us about his neighborhood. We're right here in the neighborhood right now, this afternoon, Wednesday afternoon, and Solomon has lived here for quite a while, and he's going to tell us about his neighborhood before he tells us about his community group and his campaigns. Solomon, go ahead.
Hi. Well, Esplanade, I've been here for about 15 to 16 years. It's a neighborhood that is a mixed-income neighborhood. You have condos, you have co-ops, and you have city housing. So you get a wide variety of people down here, but Esplanade still does have its problems, especially through some of the city housing. We've talked to people that have problems with their maintenance, as well as, like, we have problems with the youth and police brutality goes and lack of programs for our kids.
So tell me something about how the Esplanade Community Group came about being, and what is it?
Well, the Esplanade Community Group is a grassroots organization which started with no more than three friends that got together and decided that something needed to be done in order to invoke change within our neighborhood, right? So we came up with a brief point program, which includes housing, which includes youth programs, as well as issues around police brutality and whatever issues the community brings to us. So we're more like an advocate for the neighborhood, and whatever issues that they have, we're working on a way to deal with their issues personally.
So the Esplanade Community Group just had a recent, a meeting about police brutality, I think just last week. And can you tell us about how that went?
It was probably one of our more, it was our fifth event. It was one of our more successful events. We had an outcome of, we had about 50 or 60 people come out. It was great. We had great discussion. We had youth come out as well as adults. So we branched off into two groups where we had the youth kind of talk to us about some of the issues that they're facing. One of the more shocking things is you'll find kids that are maybe 9, 10 years old that tell you that they've experienced police brutality firsthand, either physically or verbal. We had kids that were made fun of on a racial basis by the cops, as well as we've had kids that were beat up. We actually had two incidences where we had two youth come out that were, one of them spoke at our event, and he in detail explained how the events went down. We had a kid that was choked out by the cops, and so we put it out there. Our event went well. We had Kathy Crow come out. We were endorsed by the TYNDP, which is the Young Toronto New Democratic Party. So it was very successful, and we've been getting a lot more support from the parents, which is a necessity at this point, because it's a community run thing. When people think about police brutality, they think it's something that only affects youth and hooligans and hoodlums. When we've had parents who also spoke about being targeted while they're driving, pulled over for no reason. And so what we're trying to do is find a solution between the youth and the adults in the neighborhood, and kind of have a partnership with the adults where they watch the youth's backs. If you see a kid get pulled over, you take the time, spend maybe 15 minutes to make sure that the kid is not being beat up or brutalized.
So tell me something about how you came about coming up with these types of meetings, and, you know, you say you want to come up with solutions and bring the community together. What inspired you, as you're a pretty young guy, to come up with, you know, these types of strategy, really? What inspired you to do this?
Well, we did a lot of research. We looked at some of the other organizations that started out from more or less nothing with very low funding. One of them was the Black Panther organization. We kind of studied where they went wrong and some of the things that we could take from them. So I'd say we're probably most heavily modeled by the Black Panthers. And yeah, it was, we've learned a lot of things, like, cause all of our events are run through word of mouth. And like the benefit we have is that most of us have grown up in this neighborhood, right? Yeah. So we've been able to pass the word on through word of mouth. We have connections. We've seen people that have watched us grow up since we were in elementary school and whatnot. And it's also the backing that we do through solidarity that's also helped our work, right? We've worked with OCAP, some of the unions, and they've given us financial backing and just support. They've come out to our events and come strong.
So now you're forging connections in your own community. You know this community well because you grew up here, and you're forging connections with unions, with workers. And I'm wondering, are you also thinking about maybe branching out to other neighborhoods? And do other neighborhoods have similar organizations like yours? That you know of?
As of now, one of our hopes is to eventually get out to other neighborhoods. We're trying to start a chapter out in PO or Scanning Court area, the Queen Alexander neighborhood. But as of now, like, we are we're spread very thin, so our work as of now, we're trying to focus and set the Esplanade up, and then after the Esplanade has been set up and is completely functional, then we will move on to other neighborhoods and spread the message. And if people are interested, this is a movement that will hopefully be started by the people. If the people don't want it, then it will not grow, right?
A lot of our listeners are mostly from downtown Toronto, and we're at Ryerson University, so we have a lot of younger listeners. What are the ages of the people who are involved in your group right now?
We're about, I'd say, between 20 and 24. So we're a relatively young group, And a lot of us are, this is our future work. Most of us are in either politics. I'm personally a Ryerson student as of now, taking poli-sci. So it's more or less, it's a way to make my theoretical studies at school practical. Right, a lot of schools teach you about, or a lot of philosophy or politics teach you about what's a good society, right? And I believe a good society will come from a collection of people that decide on certain things, and it will come about democratically.
And can you just tell us about more of the activities that you're doing and what folks are saying are that concern the most?
Well, as of now, we have problems with affordable programs for the youth. So one thing we're trying to do, one thing we've been doing is we've had movie nights. They're kind of political education nights. We've shown movies like The Panther, Bloods and Crips. We've had excerpts from Michael Moore movies, as well as some other cop watch programs that are going down in the States. There's one out in Cincinnati, I believe. And as of now, we're working towards having these kids be able to have accessible programs, which A, keep them off the streets, and will in turn educate them with the politics that do involve them around the world and have them understand how that affects them and how these problems are pre-existing problems.
You were talking about community center, your local community center and programs.
Well, the local community center we had, as I grew up in this neighborhood, so when we grew up, we had an abundance of programs. We had dance, we had woodworking, we had boys club, girls club. So, and as of now, like they still offer some programs. The programs have been cut, and the costs are through the roof. Right now, you're paying maybe $150 to get your son or your daughter into a music program, or you're paying $200 for karate. And all these things were free a couple years ago, as when I grew up. So we're trying to find a way to get this community center a little more involved, and subsidies are very important, because Esplanade is a single mother neighborhood, which puts a strain on mothers in the neighborhood and single parents.
Solomon, are you planning with the Esplanade Community Group any future campaigns?
Well, as of now, we're focusing on the few campaigns that we do have. We have the police brutality. We're doing a lot of work. Well, we did a lot of work alongside Kathy Crow and the recent by-election that just went by in February. As far as new campaigns, one thing that we are pushing for is to start up another chapter, like I said earlier, over in PO, more formally known as Alexandra. So as of now, we kind of have our hands full. We're following up. We're trying to, one thing that we do try to keep in mind is have the community guide us, and not necessarily us guide the community. We're an outlet for the community.
So Solomon, just to end this interview, what's your message to other young people who live out in areas in Toronto that are a lot more challenged even than the Esplanade?
Some of my advice would be to if you're concerned about the issues within your neighborhood, I guarantee you there's other people. Branch out to those other people, as well as continue to politically educate yourselves. Learn about your system in order to fight it, right? So I would say branch out to other organizations. Another good outlet, I would say, is the TYNDP. If you can get in touch with you can get in touch with them through the Esplanade Community Group or the TYNDP Facebook group. So if you can get in touch with these groups, they will be more than happy to help you out in starting something of your own. If you would like, you can come out to some of our meetings and our events. They're posted on the Esplanade Community Group. We'd love to see some new faces, get some ideas out, and we'd love to help you out with your own struggles within your own neighborhoods.
Word up, word of mouth Wednesday. We're back here. Just want to thank Robin Yeto for that interview there with Solomon Muyuboku from the Esplanade Community, Esplanade Community Group. And I just wanted to get into, maybe we'll just play a music track before we come back with our next segments here on Word of Mouth Wednesday. This one here is by Zion One and Guru. It's called For Your Mind. Shout outs to Guru and the hip-hop community, and word up.
This ain't corny, so just turn on the news. The weather's getting stormy, much worse than the blues. There's death and destruction in large amounts, while others stack riches in large accounts. The majority of people are hungry or dying, and others who had hope have now given up trying. It's all been predicted and prophesied. Something's gotta change, yo, I got to try. Social budgets being cut, facilities being shut, prisons overcrowded, man, enough is enough. And how can you turn your back to the truth? There's no excuse, you can't say there's lack of proof. Disease is rampant and war is abundant. Politicians are just getting more redundant. If your awareness is keen and you got more than a clue, then these rhymes have meaning, surely for you. One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo. Back in the days on the boulevards, I'm chilling. There used to be a crew who knew they was villains. It was a Zion, the Babylon defeater.
Yeah.
Politicians lying high, gangsters for the heaters.
Yeah, right.
You remember that routine where they pimp you for the pleasure, getting more green? Uh-huh. You know the rhythm, feed you religion. And flood the street with crack, everything in hustle vision. On point, man, all the time, homes. You on point, man, all the time, homes. You got a home, man, no can't afford those. Well then, let me say amen, God protect you where you go. Here's a funky introduction, hope you understand that there's a feeling in the air, I hope you made a plan. I'm like the energizer, cause you see a rap along about the problems in the world, keep it black strong.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
In 2008, Northern Ontario became home to our first diamond mine. Your government will build on that success, particularly in the region known as the Ring of Fire. It is said to contain one of the largest chromite deposits in the world, a key ingredient in stainless steel. There is no substitute for chromite. There is no North American producer of chromite. It is the most promising mining opportunity in Canada in a century. Your government is fully committed to working with Northerners, Aboriginal communities, and mining partners to fully realize the Ring of Fire's potential.
Word of mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the show. It's about 7:19 p.m., and I think we're getting ready here to get into the topic of the Ontario throne speech. You just heard the voice there of the Lieutenant Governor of Ontario, David Onley, reading out the throne speech that I guess was prepared by Dalton McGuinty and the executives of Ontario. That clip they were just talking about, a new mining venture they're going to be opening up in Northern Ontario in an area that they're calling the Ring of Fire, involving a chromite mine, which they're saying is going to be a big deal. Robin, what are you thinking?
You know, the Ontario government has had some serious unresolved problems with First Nations in Northern Ontario.
Yeah.
Remember the K, you know, what was happening up north?
We covered those.
We covered these here in the show.
Yeah.
They have gone unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have problems. They have. This provincial government has ongoing problems with First Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to do mining up in the north on most likely Aboriginal land.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I think this is the theme throughout this entire throne speech, is a series of promises, but not small promises, enormous promises of billions of dollars, of tens of thousands of jobs, but yet with no details whatsoever. Like, just talking about, this chromite mining,
mm-hmm.
we just have to look at mining and the provincial government's record to know where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have lots of problems with this. And it's the provincial government's lack of commitment to dealing with First Nations. You can't go and mine on First Nations lands because there are laws, you know, federal, provincial laws, that protect these lands. So when you move into these lands with private companies through your private company agents, they are essentially violating the rights of First Nations people. So how do you deal with this issue when this is historical and this is the law in this country and these are rights that are protected by the Constitution of Canada? So when you make these enormous promises, how are you going to follow through with them? Because so far, you haven't been able to. So that's just talking about chromite mining.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I know there is a lot of other issues we can get into. You know, here's a quick one that they brought up briefly in there.
Your government is also cutting corporate income taxes and eliminating the capital tax this year. And in lockstep with the federal government, Ontario is introducing a harmonized sales tax.
HST. They're saying that's coming. That's a lockstep with the federal government. That's one thing that is not, I guess, not everyone focuses on is the fact that it's approved by the federal Conservatives. This HST.
Definitely, no, definitely. This is an interesting thing because the Ontario Conservatives are on this whole anti-HST rant when their federal counterparts are passing it through, you know, with just as much joy as McGuinty is.
Right.
But you know what's interesting about the throne speech is that before they get into the HST, I like the way they lay it down. Mm-hmm. I like the way they say, you know, first of all, it's the open Ontario, you know, five-year plan, right? It's an open Ontario, open for business, essentially, is what it means. You know, we're creating a climate where business can thrive. We're going to create jobs and we're going to have innovations. You know, we're going to have a package of tax reforms. We're going to modernize our tax system. This is building up. Mm-hmm. And they leave the HST right at the end. But I'm just going to build it up the way that, you know, the way that they did. And that they're going to modernize the tax system. They're going to be more competitive. They're going to create more jobs. And then to say that income taxes for Ontarians were cut on January 1st. I'm surprised they didn't say that, you know, they're going to be sending us a check too, which is what they like to tell us. They're going to send us some kind of, you know, one-time $1,000 check in order for us to distract us from what's coming up next, right? So, and then what do they say? And they say, your government will also be cutting corporate income taxes and eliminating the capital tax this year. And then in lockstep with the federal government, so that the Conservatives don't criticize them, we're introducing the harmonized sales tax. That's it. That's the only place where they mention the HST.
Right.
And they don't call it the HST. They call it the harmonized sales tax because the Liberals know that most Ontarians, about 80% of Ontarians at least, are entirely against a new tax during tough times. So, but it's interesting how they build it up. And then they say, independent economists say that the changes will create 600,000 more Ontario jobs over the next 10 years, including over 100,000 in manufacturing alone. So these improvements to the tax system benefit all Ontarians. Isn't that amazing? Like, I mean, how exactly is the HST going to benefit jobs in the manufacturing sector? Are we going to be building new things in Ontario? Oh, and that continues, right? Because they do claim that they're going to build more things in Ontario.
Exactly.
But they're crediting their improvements in the tax system and the HST and the implementation of the HST for creating new jobs. It's kind of absurd. You know, it's absurd. What is their real plan to create jobs? Well, not this, you know, tax reform, because we all know that's a farce. How does cutting your taxes create jobs? I don't know. Because jobs are created by people who are working at something, right? They're producing something. So what was in the throne speech that was actually real in terms of job creation?
I think this clip right here is getting at, this might be getting at more who the audience for this throne speech was, who the Liberals are directing these policies towards. Check this one out.
Canada's banks, based here in Ontario, are widely recognized as the soundest in the world. Toronto is now North America's third largest financial center and home to 350,000 jobs. Ontario-wide, the sector supports 625,000 jobs. So your government is working with the Financial Services Leadership Council to support the industry and create a strategy to make Toronto one of the world's elite financial centers. And your government applauds the federal government's efforts to create a national securities regulator. It should be located in Toronto.
In Toronto.
Toronto. Okay, if anybody, I mean, I grew up here in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that the elite of Toronto is the financial sector of Toronto.
Right.
Like, you don't have to invest anything to make the financial sector of Toronto the elite of Toronto. This is where, you know, the largest banks in the world have their headquarters. Mm-hmm. Canadian banks have a monopoly over the financial system in Canada, much more so than any other country in the world. So how is it that you're going to create, you somehow are going to be innovative and create an elite, you know, in terms of finances as a government? Like, why do the largest banks with the largest amount of profits in Canada of any company or corporation or industry, why do they need to have any kind of further investments after they were given a $75 billion bailout, which nobody wants to talk about? Like, this doesn't make sense to me. What does it mean to you?
Yeah, right. Exactly. I think actually maybe this could be a good time to open up the phones, because we got to get some other opinions, just in case anybody listening has anything to say on, you know, all the stuff we're talking about here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. You can give us a call at 416-979-5251, extension 0, and we'll take your call on air. 416-979-5251, extension 0. And, you know, we just played some of these clips here from the Lieutenant Governor of Ontario, David Onley, talking about the Liberal policy plans for the future.
You know, I think what was very interesting is something that I take serious is, you know, they mentioned the Ontario Second Career Program.
Right.
You know, this is very important because there's a lot of people who have lost their jobs and they need to be retrained and they need to find, you know, new jobs with their new retraining. So I find retraining in terms of going to school at, you know, local community colleges to be a very important program, something that can actually work for a lot of young people, a lot of, workers who have lost their jobs. It is something that should be open to anyone who's eligible. So anyone who's lost their job and also young folks who are looking to get their education and to get to work. Now, the problem is, and this is where I'd like to, you know, if you're listening and you know about this program and you've tried to apply to this program, I'd like you to call in. I think we have a caller right now.
We actually got a caller right here on the air. Hello, caller.
Mazaman.
Hi. Do you have any comments here on what you're hearing today?
Yeah, it's, I'm actually driving on the road and I'm just taking it in, you know. I heard your show a couple of times. It's a real good show. I like the way how you show some insight on issues that ain't brought to the public on a regular basis.
Thanks.
But it is very weird. It's like they did just get a bailout. Now they're talking about this Chromite situation. It's like it's just, you know, they're always up to something. And it's so hard for us to even get any kind of information of what they're doing and what they're doing with our tax dollars all at the same time. Because every day we're paying for these services and we're always paying for these, basically, we're working for these things. Hardworking people are working for these things every day.
Sure.
And these guys just have the ability to just, whatever they want to decide, they just do it. And it's like they don't even really get any insight from the society itself. And it's kind of weird. They're making all these big decisions without any of our consent, and we're the one paying the taxes at the same time. But at the end of the day, it's like, what could we do? It's like the most we could do is just at least do our homework, be very aware, keep your ears and your eyes open. It's very, don't believe everything what you see, you know, and don't believe everything that you hear when it comes from as far as politicians go. Now, I'm not saying all politicians are bad, but we really got to be in tune with what's going on. And I think as long as you could separate, you know, the smoke and the cloud and make things a little clearer for your vision to understand and realize what's really going on in our city, in our province, in our country, and around the world, this affects all of us. So I just say as people, we just got to be aware and just make those smart choices as time goes on.
All right, yeah, very true words. Thanks a lot for calling.
All right, peace.
Peace. All right. Yeah, so we got some callers there. And if anybody else wants to call in, you can call 416-979-5251, extension 0, to get on the Word of Mouth Wednesday with your views.
Yeah, so I was just, you know, talking about the Ontario Second Career Program.
Right.
And like I said, this is an idea that I take seriously, right? Because at some point in your life, due to work problems or due to, you know, you need to have training. Young people need to go to school. It's not easy to afford, you know, rates right now. Universities are very expensive. I mean, if you look at the rates, you know, universities compared to community colleges, you know, you'll take community college just because the costs are maybe 1/4 of the cost of university right now in Ontario. So Ontario is becoming, the university is becoming more and more elitist. So when you have a program that the government is sponsoring called the Ontario Second Career Program, it means it's giving you a second chance, right? It's giving you a second chance education. And from what I hear, they fund your education supposedly between something like $24,000 and $26,000. You know, you can actually get a degree with this program. So it's an excellent idea. The problem is, who is able to get in? How many people are able to get in? Are you just saying that this program exists and not allowing people to get into this program? And you're saying that, you know, it's open to everybody who's eligible, but are you actually allowing people who are eligible to take this program? So, you know, you put it into your throne speech. The problem is, the reality is, most people who are applying for this can't get in. And so if anybody's listening right now in downtown Toronto, where there's a lot of, George Brown College, there's Ryerson, there's, you know, U of T, there's a lot of education centers here, and a lot, and thousands of folks in downtown Toronto going to school. If you're listening to this program right now and you've applied to Ontario Second Career Program, I'd like you to call in. If you, at 416-979-5251, extension 0, and tell us about your experience applying for it and what you found. So I do take that one seriously. Mm-hmm. And I have read articles, you know, there have been articles already published about this program and how it is failing, you know, a huge number of people who are applying and not getting in. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave it at that. So
right.
What's next?
And I know the post-secondary whole situation is under threat. You know, we had Muhammad Ali Amir, who's the president of CSER here at Ryerson, on the show last week talking about this, that the faculties have been told to, all faculties across Ryerson have been told to brace for cuts, that there's going to be budget cuts going all across the whole university. And I have a feeling it's not just Ryerson. It's going to be all across the province probably. So
the problem is when they make cuts, when the government makes cuts to the universities, the universities still have to pay for that budget. That budget then gets paid for by students.
Right.
That goes directly to students. And, you know, at some point we'll be going right into an entire program about, you know, this crisis in education in terms of mm-hmm. post-secondary education and the debt, you know, student debt. Because right now students are able to pay for a very expensive, like even Ryerson University today is quite expensive.
Yep.
Particularly if you're from, a regular family with mother and father working but not in, you know, high middle class jobs. If you're just a regular working family, to send your kids to two or three kids to university without a student loan is impossible. Mm-hmm. So you must get a student loan, and unfortunately that student loan is controlled by the banks and their interest rates, and it is not subsidized by the government. So they're at the same time making cuts to the universities, and they're also putting the burden onto students. And the problem with us, with students, you know, you and I both know, because we've both been post-secondary school students here, right here in Ryerson. Mm-hmm. We both know that when we're in university, we don't worry too much because we have the loan covering things. Once you leave, once you graduate, 6 months after you graduate, your lending institution expects you to start paying back your loan at their interest rates, which for me was 10%. Whoa. It was 10%, and they expected me to start paying 6 months after I graduated. Mm-hmm. Right? That was the deal. Now, if you can't find a job, it doesn't matter because they don't take that into consideration. If you can't find a job, you can't pay your loan, you become a delinquent. Mm-hmm. You become what they term a delinquent. It doesn't matter that you obeyed all the laws. It doesn't matter that you were an A student. It doesn't matter that, you know, you're a good kid. It doesn't matter how many hours of volunteer service you've done in your community, you become a delinquent. So you know, this is something to think about. But what else in the throne speech there, Daniel?
Well, I think this is a good, this is an interesting clip here to go into, because this right here, we got the response here of the throne speech by the Ontario PC leader. Here's a, one clip of what his reaction was after hearing this.
Wow. Colleagues have read the throne speech exactly. Three lines, 24 words. 24 words for a 24.7 billion dollar deficit.
Billion a word.
My colleagues are correct. That's more than $1 billion per word. Mr. Speaker, newspaper headlines are longer than that. But I suspect there's good reason for this. Finance Minister Duncan admitted in his fall economic statement that the McGuinty Liberals had no plan to deal with the deficit. And now, 7 months later, nothing has changed. But the province is watching. The province is waiting, and Ontario families won't get fooled again. And of course, Mr. Speaker, there was nothing in the throne speech about the massive super corporation or mega corporation or whatever they're going to call it. And it has no doubt many Liberal consultants and insiders in an excited lather at the fees they can get out of this deal. This is clearly a plan for off-book borrowing, plain and simple, all facilitated by the aggressive Wall Street banking firm Goldman Sachs, which is one of the key players in the international financial meltdown of a year or so ago.
They've reappeared again, Goldman Sachs. We've talked about them on the show. We've got word from their current CEO that they're doing God's work. And now I guess they're working a deal with Ontario. I guess they're part of this. There is a plan that I've heard of that they're trying to work out here about making a super corporation and putting the Ontario Hydro in with the LCBO and I think the lottery and having that as a market tradable corporation that people could invest that privately. Private investors could invest into these stocks, I guess, into these. This major corporation, I guess that's how I've, at least that's how I've heard it described. Have you heard about this mega corporation?
You know, I'm surprised that the because this whole deficit issue, right? Their plan to privatize, you know, Ontario Power Generation, and their plan to privatize LCBO, and you know, should have been in this throne speech because I do think that they are, if they're going to make a mega corporation, it's in order to be able to sell off, you know, a lot of their shares of this so-called company. Essentially, the Liberal government will not tell Ontarians that they're going to privatize these major crown assets because they know that most Ontarians would not agree to that because these are profitable crown corporations and it would be absurd to privatize them. The LCBO, for instance, everybody knows that the LCBO is an enormous cash cow. I mean, if you've been to a liquor store, I mean, that is nonstop traffic in one liquor store in any neighborhood all day. So to give this away would be an absurdity. To sell it off to a private company would be an absurdity. So the Liberal government will not tell Ontarians that that's what they're doing. So they will create a mega corporation. And what they, according to what I read in an article in the paper, and I don't really take the papers to be truth, but it's an interesting term because they had been interviewing an insider within the Liberal Party who came up with a very interesting way of what I believe they're going to do to our Ontario Crown, very profitable assets, in order to get themselves out of this deficit. I think what they will try to do is what this insider said is keep the shell but gut the inside. That's what they've done to hospitals too. Mm-hmm. Like our hospitals are now only a shell is owned by the provincial, owned by the government. And so officially it's owned by the government. But everything in the inside, all the services are privatized. Mm-hmm. You know, it is the Liberal way of doing things without telling you that they're privatizing. You know, they're not right. Like, you know, the neocons that tell you, man, we're going to privatize everything, and if you try to stop us, you're some kind of wingnut, which is what they would be. So they have a far more complex PR way of looking at, way of communicating their policies. So they poll Ontarians first. They find out what you think, and then they make sure that even though they're going to do what you don't want, they're going to couch it in terms that will be acceptable to you.
Right. And, you know, the Goldman Sachs was mentioned, and I know that they were mentioned in reference to the that big economic crisis of 2008 when everything was going on and, you know, things were going down. And then the whole economic system was believed to have been saved through something called the TARP that they passed in the United States. Within less than 2 weeks, it was passed, $700 billion given to all the major lending firms, investment banks. And there is a strong possibility, and this is something I've been researching on my own, that the TARP is a major cover-up. And actually, when you look in the dictionary definition of a TARP, which is an informal shortening of tarpaulin, the TARP is a noun for a material such as waterproof canvas used to cover, protect things from moisture. It's a sheet of material, heavy cloth covering, a protective covering of canvas or other material. Basically, the definition of a TARP is a cover-up. So this whole situation with the Ontario government now getting involved with Goldman Sachs is a bit I'm a bit skeptical on it. But I guess we have to remember that Goldman Sachs has some say they've infiltrated, but they've spread out a lot of former Goldman Sachs employees throughout governments and financial institutions all around the world. So you know what? I think we can get into talking about Canada, talking about Toronto, and getting into some more national and local issues. But first, maybe we'll just play a track and come right back on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. This one's by Classified. It's a track called "Oh Canada."
Told this guy where I was from. He said, "Oh, Canada." Kind of laughs it off. It's funny, huh? Yeah. Come on. 1, 2, 1, 2. Mic check. 1, 2, 1, 2. Yeah. Yeah, from the land of the lost, Trans-Canada cross, patriotic and a honor with my hand on my heart. From the greatest of lakes, to the greenest of greens, to the rockiest mountains and everything in between. Oh Canada, oh, you're no fan of us, cause the movie and TV shows are so amateur. Yeah, we laugh it off, that don't really bother me. Look, we ain't serious unless you really gotta be. Humorous attitudes like kids in a hall, the Jim Carrey, Mike Myers, how we claiming them all. It's a great white north, among the funniest actors, the fun of the joke with an abundance of laughter. The red and white flag, keep it high, keep it visual. People say Canada gets stereotypical. Think we finish every sentence with buddy or bye. And if it ain't that, it's either dude A or guy. Yeah, we consider it people. And smoke a marijuana, we consider it legal. Still doing rap like the 1990s, but that's how we like it, off time and grimy. I know where I'm from and I told you before. North of America, hard to ignore. Every time I go away, I tell them for sure. I'm from Canada, oh, oh, Canada. Oh Canada, oh, oh, oh Canada. I'm from Canada, oh, oh, oh Canada. When class makes a sick beat, we call it a classic. When class makes a sick beat, we call it a classic. When class makes a sick beat, we call it a classic. When class makes a sick beat, we call it a classic. I've been around the globe and heard the confusion. Honestly, a lot of y'all are ignorant and stupid. Yes, we have microwave TVs and cell phones. Unintelligent fuck, we invented the telephone. We made Yahtzee, the light bulb, hockey, and bred the greatest players, Gretzky to Crosby. We all got at least one drinking buddy, and after one drink, all of us think we're funny. A national mascot's a damn beaver. Oh Canada, we love our beaver. Home of Hell's Angels and RCMP. Home of Gordon Lightfoot and SCTV. The Underground Railroad, George St. Pierre right here's where we call home. A healthcare system, y'all know it's free. Keep a girl's banging with a full mouth of teeth. I won't even get into the music industry. They say hip-hop is dead, nah, it's up north with me. I can do this all day, it's a part of my routine. But supper's almost done and tonight routine. I know where I'm from and I told you before. North of America, hard to ignore. Every time I go away, I tell them for sure. I'm from Canada, oh, 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 Canada. I'm from the East Coast of Canada. East Coast. I'm from Canada, so sometimes words come over my mouth like this. Get used to it.
This is a year when the eyes of the world are on Canada. A year in which our athletes are excelling here at home at the Olympic and Paralympic Games. A year in which Canada will host world leaders at the North American G8 and G20 summits. A year in which Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II will celebrate Canada Day with Canadians. A year in which Canadians are leading the way in humanitarian efforts in Haiti, just as they are standing for freedom at great cost in Afghanistan. And it is a year during which the Canadian economy is emerging from recession as one of the strongest and most resilient in the developed world. These are all things of which Canadians can be justifiably proud.
Word of mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the show. You just heard there the Governor of Canada, Governor General of Canada, Michelle John, speaking on her speech of the throne, which took place last week. And, you know, that's how she ended the speech there. Talking about what's going on in 2010. We've got the G8, G20 coming up in June. And then she also announced there that the Queen of England will be in Canada for July 1st for Canada Day. Things are going to be happening locally. Things are happening nationally. And then she ended that clip there ended with talking about recovery, talking about the bouncing back from the recession, the recovery. And, you know, I think we got a quick clip here about, you know, how about how the federal government is going at this. This was, I think this took place on Monday, and it was a press conference, Stockwell Day, talking about where he's, you know, the federal financial things going on with the Treasury Board.
This year, you're going to see the usual growth in size. In the out years, your operations budgets are going to be frozen. Now, we're not going to put a number in terms of individuals. I think in some divisions within a department, you may see more people being hired on. In others, you may see less. The fact is, right now, about 13,000 people a year leave the public service, either through retirement or for some other reason. That alone creates opportunities. That alone creates breathing room for departments to make decisions. But we're not going to say the final number has to be this, but we are saying this is the money that you're getting to deliver that service, so decide how you want to operate with it.
So now if that's coming out as something, you know, if you can't tell what he's talking about, a bit unreferenced, he's talking about the proposed cuts for the public sector, which he's given federal public sector officials. He's told them that they have to make cuts, but he's given no specifics on how much to cut or where to cut or stuff like that. So people are getting a bit concerned, and there's also, you know, you're also seeing threats to the pension plan. But I think just to round this off, we might get the critic for the Treasury Board, Pat Martin. He's an NDP MP critic who's the critic of Stockwell Day. Here was his response to this.
It's a risky gambit to take on the public service. If you have an election during the middle of this exercise, there's going to be pushback, surely. But it's also easy to vilify the public service. You're seeing it incrementally now with speeches from the executive officers, etc., saying that legacy costs are the reason that we're having an economic downturn. That's a backdoor assault on pensions generally. They're trying to shop around the notion that pensions are a luxury we can no longer afford in private or public sector. It's easier to go after the public sector ones because they're trying to portray them as being, generous. Our argument has always been, you know, drag the other workers up to that standard. Don't drag the public service down to the private sector standards. Only 20% of Canadians are lucky enough to have a pension plan in the private sector now. Used to be an expectation. So this is very much the Americanization of Canadian economy to try and say that you as an individual are responsible for your own retirement security, therefore will have a 401k kind of a old age security system. That very much is ideologically driven and part of the you know, the neoconservative agenda.
Neocons in Ottawa. Well, that was the trade critic there for the NDP speaking out, I guess, against the cuts to the public sector that the president of the Treasury Board, Stockwell Day, announced, as well as the threats to the pension plan. Robin, what are you thinking about the federal economics?
Well, you know, I mean, I just want to make a comment because politics is all about your interest, right? It's all about interest groups. And you know, when he says, when Pat Martin is talking about 20% of
private sector
workers in the private sector having pensions, that 20% that enjoys these private pensions, they, you know, they obviously will have not have a problem with everybody else getting rid of their pensions, because, you know, I have talked to people who have worked in these jobs in the States, who get their whatever that 401k plan, and they think it's great. They also said in the States, these people who have, you know, health insurance, that it was amazing. That the health insurance that they had in the States with their private health insurance was incredible. Like, they had attention that they don't get here in Canada, right? So my point is, if you have it, and this is politics, if you have it, you know, you don't care that the rest don't have it, right? Why should you? Because you're getting the benefits. But for 80% of people who don't have pensions in the private sector, they do have real concerns. The problem is that a lot of our perspectives that come in the media have the perspective of the top 20%, right? And so I just want to get that down first before we discuss anything further, because if we're going to get phone calls from folks, it's a very interesting thing, because pensions, when you get old, you just don't have the same energy that you had, you know, not just when you were 20, but when you, even when you were 40 and 50. You know, once you head into your golden years, it's a totally different story, and you need a pension to get by. Now, if you don't have one, what are you going to do in cities as expensive as Toronto and Vancouver, et cetera? So it's a very important point, pensions. We don't think about it enough, and we get too much of the perspective, like Pat Martin is saying, from the American sort of private class of people who are very elite. These are elite groups who are able to get the benefits of these things, and then they put it onto the rest of us that it's great, that it's great. But if you actually talk to these folks, you know, they've lost. Private jobs are not permanent. So they've lost these jobs and they've lost their benefits. So now they're, you know, the ones that I've talked to are here in Canada now and saying, well, it's like a nostalgia. It was great while I had it, but it's gone. But thank God they're here in Canada. Now you have a public system that may not be, you know, up to the standards of being a rich person and having a huge whatever insurance plan. But hey, you know, if you have an emergency, you will be taken care of.
Exactly, yeah, and we got to keep we're going to keep our eyes out. We're going to keep our ears open about the pension plan, because that's a very important issue. We got to think about in these times of an economic crisis where they're announcing a record deficit for Ontario and a record deficit for federal government. So we're getting this provincially, federally, bad things going on economically. Who would have thought that today a surprise press conference was called by the Mayor Miller to announce a further surplus? They've already announced a surplus. This is an even bigger surplus. Here is a bit of what happened in the press conference in the Q&A portion.
I just simply can't agree that the sixth largest government in this country running a surplus during the biggest recession since the 1930s due to prudent management and rather difficult decisions that were taken last year about wage constraint, which you might recall. That resulted in the surplus, together with management of our portfolio and the fact that our official plan and our policy to completely waive development charges on commercial development has resulted in the biggest building boom in the city's history. That's reflected in the surplus as well. because the supplementary taxes that come from the approximately 110 tall buildings being built in this city as a result of deliberate city policies are reflected in our ability to deliver this budget in 2011. And, you know, I think if you look at governments of comparable size in Canada, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, maybe Saskatchewan's probably okay because of potash, but I'm sure Manitoba and the Maritime provinces who have a similar size budget to ours or smaller would be delighted to be running a surplus. That's the reality that governments face today is people are running deficits. The city of Toronto is running a surplus, and I'm really sorry. I think that's unalloyed good news. I mean, if people want to slash and privatize, it's because of their own ideology or political opinions. There is no financial reason to do that whatsoever. There's none. When I was elected mayor in 2003, there was not a $75 million tax stabilization reserve. Give you some sense of what that is. It's equivalent to the proceeds from almost a 4% tax hike. That's quite significant resources. That's there. The path is there for a balanced budget for 2011. And if people choose to cut services, that'll be because they wish to. It won't be because they have to.
And I think Mayor Miller right there was just directing some of those comments to the candidates for mayor who are talking about privatizing the assets of the city of Toronto. But I guess, Robin, did this surprise you when you're hearing today that there's $100 million now that Toronto's found, that they've got a surplus?
Yeah, I mean, it is surprising. I think, you know, Mayor Miller is doing this for a good reason because, you know, this mayoral race is proving to be, you know, quite it's going to be hard to be progressive in this mayoral race. And so I think he's doing this he's being criticized left, right, and center now for doing such a horrible job and driving the economy of Toronto into the drain. So I think he's defending himself and, you know, he's come up with this money. But I think it is for a better cause. I mean, to try to put a halt on the justification of these arguments, these false arguments that we need to privatize things in Toronto. I think that if anything, people in Toronto are not asking for privatization. They're not interested in privatization. I think they're asking for more services, and like the TTC. You know, they have concerns about recreation centers, about programs for children. All these types of arguments that should be on the table, and I think Mayor Miller's trying to, you know, not only protect himself, but I think he's also trying to make sure that we start maybe talking about those issues, and also talk about uploading the costs from the city back to the province, because that's what the province promised, that's what the deal that they had with Miller was. And that's what we're waiting for. But as it seems through the throne speech, we get a whole whack of promises, and the delivery is something else.
Right. Yeah, and we've heard. Yeah, we played some clips there. We played some clips from the speech by the Lieutenant Governor of Ontario, David Onley, and. You know, we played a lot of clips. Just wanted to, thank our interview at the start of the show, Solomon Muyobaki of the Esplanade Community Group, and thank Robin Nieto for bringing that in. Robin Nieto.
No problem, Libby.
Co-host here. Yeah, and my name's Daniel Libby, and I just want to read out a few events here. Coming up on Friday, March the 12th, 7 p.m., there's a Socialist Action Canada Presents public hearing on the funding of Catholic schools in Ontario, sponsored by the NDP Socialist Caucus. That's this Friday at the OISE Auditorium, U of T campus, 252 Bloor Street West. More info at rabble.ca. Also, Saturday afternoon, the Toronto Truth Seekers are going to be returning to a street action at the Yonge Dundas Square Saturday afternoon. TorontoTruthSeekers.com for more info on that. And just want to thank all our listeners for listening. And stay tuned for the Blues Dr. Julie Hill with the Blue Remedy coming up next. My name's Daniel Libby. Shout out again to all the good people out there. Check out the Hip Hop Pioneers exhibit at the Toronto Free Gallery, Lansdowne in Bloor area. It's a dope show. And much respect to everyone. Word up. Word is bond. Word out. We'll be right back.
people running around trying to get to the top when the